That's not where just get it here.
As it is, 102, according to my clock, not the city's clock. May 12th, I'm Matthew Steckman, on the order of this meeting of the Ocala Police Officers Retirement System Board of Trustees. Now everyone else will say who they are.
Michael Summer, Secretary.
Doug Chively, Board Member.
Dane Griffin, Board Member.
Larry Cole, Investment Consultant.
Diane Radford, CFO, ACM. Cindy Kelly, Deputy CFO, observing.
Dale Adams, Plan Administrator.
Alicia Gainer.
All right. The first item on the agenda is review minutes of prior meetings. I know that is by email.
Anybody need copies? I've got a few copies.
I need the dates.
We have February 10th and March 12th.
I'm going to amend this to be approved.
I say. All in favor?
Aye.
Yes, opposed? Motion passes. Next will be the retirement job benefits, Johnny Roberts.
What you have before you is retirement benefits for Johnny Robinson, who elected to go into the drop as of April 1st after just over 20 years of service. He elected to go with a 20% lump sum, which is shown on the second to the right column on your sheet, with a lump sum amount of $107,781.68. And he also elected to go with a 10-year guarantee with 120 payments guaranteed in the amount of $33,607.
I will move to approve his benefit selection.
I second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion passes. At this time, do we have any public input or comments? We have no public, I assume we don't. Now, it's your turn.
Good afternoon.
We have the 331 report in front of you, so wait.
Just as a reminder, this is the first quarter of calendar year. Review. It's also halfway through your fiscal year. So the numbers you see here, we're halfway through there. As we sit here today, we're up just a little bit from the values you'll see here, but not a whole lot, probably a little less than 1%, but slightly. It's been a pretty volatile quarter. The market's up strong today, too, so for what that's worth, but we'll see how we end up. But right now, you got a good fiscal year going. I'll show you that here in just a second. Page three, I'll start there. The performance for the quarter, you can see on page three, you were up about four lines down, $955,930 for the quarter. Your ending market value up above that is $58,387,000. We're at $58,437,000 as of a couple of days ago, so probably up a little bit more from that today. The investment return for the quarter net of investment management fees was 1.7%. In line with the benchmark there, and then the 1 year up 14.1%. Again, that's all net of investment management fees, and in a strong bull market, I'm actually pleasantly surprised we're keeping up that well in a strong bull market. We talked about that before. This is kind of a little bit more of a defensive style of portfolio when you look at the manager styles, and so it's good that we're keeping up in this kind of market because I really expect this to do well when it goes the other way. Page four and five are the guidelines and investment policy review. I'll talk about all the managers here in just a second. Skip down to the bottom of page five, that last section. These are all compliance issues. If anything was marked no there, we have to make some changes. These are all dealing with the investment policy and Florida statutes. So we have no compliance issues. Everything's in compliance. So when you look at the asset allocation on page six, again, remember this is a snapshot as of the end of the quarter. We're still overweighted in domestic equities, in particular in large cap. I'll have a recommendation here in a minute to address that a little bit. Everything else is sort of in line. I like where we are right now in terms of the total allocation. Won't really be making any rebalancing recommendations other than the fact that we've got a lot of cash we need to raise here for a couple of drops between now and I think August. If I remember, about $1.8 million that we're going to be raising. I have a recommendation on that. I'll come back to maybe at the end of the report. If you look at the managers on page 7, one I think it's probably a new one because it funded on January 2nd, but UBS did call for some money, so the real estate, the last one on there, that came in on January the 2nd. Of this year, so we do have now another $1 million invested in real estate, and it's done pretty well so far. I'll share those numbers. Actually, I don't have a separate report for them, but in the summary section on page 2, the very last bullet point, sorry to jump you around, the very last bullet point on there talks about they funded on 1-2, so technically they weren't there at the beginning of the quarter, so the system doesn't pick them up, but their actual number for the quarter from inception of January 2nd was 2.5%, 2.54% just for the quarter. So off to a good start. So you now have American Realty and UBS for your two real estate funds. Page 8, I've mentioned this to you before, highlighted again a little bit. What this is, the asset allocation, kind of looking back over the last 5 years. And when you look back on the far right-hand column, if you look back 5 years ago, go down to the fixed income, you'll notice you were almost 40%, you were 39% in bonds. And we've talked about this over the last few years, that we just don't feel with bonds interest rates at these levels that bonds were going to be able to give us the returns they've given us over the last 30 years, quite frankly. So that's why, you know, you added convertibles, MLPs, and a little more diversification without taking that equity risk if you were to move it straight into stocks, but lowering that bond percentage from 39 really down to a current level of about 26. Now, there's two things I'll make, and on the very next page, keep that in mind as you look at the next page, 2 points. One is, when you look at the quarter's returns, you'll see why we didn't get rid of bonds completely, because bonds did pretty good, and they're having a pretty good quarter right now. So even though rates are this low, they've actually come down a little bit more. So your bonds were up about 1.2% just for the quarter, so that's not a bad move. However, when you look at the 1- and 2-year columns on page 9, if you look at fixed income, go under the 2-year column, and go down to fixed income. See, Sawgrass fixed income was 2.1%. Everybody with me? So that's 2.1% per year for the last 2 years. Go up that column to convertibles, and you'll see 13.8. And go up even further, all the equity returns are up above that. So my point is, every dollar we took out of fixed income and moved into convertibles has been rewarded rather substantially over the last couple of years. If you go over to the 1-year column, you'll see the same picture, including the real estate. Bonds were actually down a little bit for the year, minus 0.4%, so let's say flat for the year, but every dollar that we either moved or didn't keep in fixed income earned 13% if it was in American Fund, the real estate product, and earned, if you're going up the page, then 15.9 if it went into convertibles. So those are two asset classes you didn't own 5 years ago, and it's really, it doesn't usually work out that well. I mean, that always worked out that well. I can't say it doesn't usually, hopefully it usually does, but it doesn't always work out as well. But lowering the bond exposure has really helped the overall plan and actually made this plan a lot of money, as you can see. Because when you start putting the numbers, you've got $5 million, let's say, with Advent. Over 1 year, it earned, what, 16% more than it would have in bonds. 16% on $5 million is some real money. Just under $1 million. So worked out well. Your returns down on page 9 in the bold line, up two-thirds of the way down there. 1.9, these are gross of investment management fees. So 1.9% for the quarter, 8.3 for fiscal year to date. So I would say we're probably around 9% as we sit here today, or close to it. So that's not an annualized number, that's an actual number. So if we didn't make a dime between now and September 30, you'd have a pretty decent fiscal year. But we expect you to still have a pretty good year. But who knows what will happen between now and September 30. 1 year number is 14.8%, and then the next three numbers are all annualized numbers. So you had 12.8% per year for the last 2 years, 10.4 for the last three, and 14 for the last five. You notice the 14 is a little below the target index of 15.2. You've made a couple manager changes over the last few years, and we've added some asset classes, and really, relative to the benchmarks, things have started to look a little bit better. But the absolute numbers are still very, very good, and even for the 5 years, you've kept up pretty well. tough for a bull market like this.
We've done three asset classes in the last four, five, four, well, I guess Frontier, Perimeter. Yeah.
And Frontier, Perimeter,
two real estate. Advent.
Actually, Frontier, Perimeter, Advent, and Westwood, and the two real estate have all been at the last 5 years. So
yeah.
Things are, but it, and then like you've just been sitting here looking at the returns, right? Yeah. You've done, I think you've done well as a board in listening not only to our advice, but even your managers have come in. I think they've given you some good advice over the years, too. Anyway, things are looking pretty good. I like the way the portfolio is positioned right now, and the returns have started to improve. Page 10 backs that up even a little bit more, I guess, when you look at the rankings relative to other public pension funds around the country. 3 years and in, you're 21, 21, 21, and 42, all those well above average, and three out of four there in the top quartile. And even the five-year number with a couple manager problems and a strong, strong bull market led by lower quality, you're still almost right in the middle of the pack. So I like what I see. In a down market, I would expect your plan to do even better. And then on page 11, those charts are starting to, you know, I've been saying we want to inch up, we want to get up in the top left, but it takes, you just can't get there overnight, right? But the three-year now has inched into that top left quadrant, which is less risk and more reward. 5 years still, we got less risk but a little less reward. So we haven't quite kept up in the bull market here. You know, 5 years now has been all bull market. So that's the good news. Mm-hmm. You got to pedal hard to keep up in a bull market when you've got the kind of managers and structure we have in this portfolio. So not too bad. Not too bad. If you go then to page 13, are your fiscal year returns for going back to 2004? I show you this every quarter. But those are actual fiscal year returns until you get to the one on the left. That's the fiscal year to date. That's at about 8.3 and probably closer to 9 as we sit here today. So some good numbers. 2008 finally rolled off and that 5 year average. So none too soon. When we start looking at the individual managers on page 14, Sawgrass has done a good job for you. They're especially on a risk-adjusted basis. I think I mentioned this to you before, but I look at the beta, too. Up in the top left, you see that column called beta. Mm-hmm. Anything below one means they're taking a little less risk than the market that they invest in, which is the Russell 1000 growth. Significantly less. They're down in the 80s. That's a fairly low volatility portfolio. Their alpha is all positive, so they're adding to that stock selection. So in this market, now their overall returns down on the next grouping of numbers, 5 year numbers a little bit below the benchmark, but with an alpha of 81 on a risk adjusted basis, that's a great, great return. I have no problems with it. And they've just done a good job for you, I think, on a risk adjusted basis. Westwood, kind of the same story, not quite as good. They struggled a little bit more, but on a risk adjusted basis, two out of the three periods there, the one and the five, are still below one. And they're not far, they actually had a decent year. They were above the benchmark for the 1 year slightly. Again, they're kind of the same issue. It's very high quality, sort of a defensive-oriented portfolio. And you go back and look at Westwood's history, one of the reasons you hired them was they have really good downside protection in their portfolio. They just haven't had a down market since you hired them, basically. So keeping an eye on them, you know, we know them well, you know them well. I think we're comfortable with the process and the team there. Frontier has been a good addition. They had a return of 24.9% for the year, a little bit above the benchmark, just slightly above average. That's on page 16. Page 17 is Perimeter. They came back a little bit this year, which they needed to. They had a 27.5% year, slightly ahead of their benchmark. Still behind for the three, but seems to be going in the right direction. I think I mentioned to you I had a visit with them probably late last summer. It's been a little longer. Yeah, late last summer. Talked to them since, but actually does do the offices and that was the team. I'm comfortable with them. Advent, been a good, has already pointed out the difference in the convertibles versus the bonds, and they performed pretty well at 15.9%. That's a little below that benchmark, but again, they focus on very high quality names, so I'm not concerned about that right now. And they rank right in the middle of the pack in the convertible. And that's pretty good because convertibles, that convertible universe includes everything. And a whole lot of stuff you would never want to invest in as a pension fund. You might individually, that's up to you, but as a pension fund, we don't want to go there. Kind of lower quality and higher risk stuff. They don't, so that there's no universe that breaks out to the quality orientation that they have, but it's the best we've got. They're doing good. Again, a low beta relative to the market, so they're doing a good job. Euro Pacific is on page 19. They ended up having a good year, up 18.56%, top 30th percentile. They're up above average in the top three. They're still below average in the top five because of the Europe exposure, but their longer-term numbers, we talked about this before, they're by 51 basis point funds, been around longer than most. I think it's got a 15-20-year track record, and it has been a very good performer with less risk. So comfortable with that allocation. And then American Realty, you now had over a year. Return 13.16%, sort of in line with the ODCE benchmark, and a little bit lower beta and a positive alpha. So they're adding value there. Then you haven't had West for very long, so I just put this in. This is the MLP product that you're invested in. This is just a kind of a quick synopsis. I think it's a very good one, easy to read. And so until we get a little more data, put it into our format, this is information on that fund. And it's been a good performer so far for you. As a matter of fact, I was going to point out on page 9. Again, I'm jumping you around today, trying to keep you awake. Page 9 for the quarter, that was your best performing asset class. So your brand new investment was your best performing asset class at 4.6%. We still really like the asset class in terms of the growth potential there in addition to the yield. And then fixed income. I haven't seen David here for a while from Sawgrass, but he'd tell you they're struggling to make money in this kind of a bond market. Never when rates go up, the market values go down. We value everything at market. So if the market value drops more than the coupon, you can get in negative territory, and that's what happened for the year. So he's shortened the durations. Remember, we also made some adjustments to the investment policy that allowed him to become a little bit more conservative if he wants to. And so that's up to them, their discretion, but they have the leeway to protect your assets a little bit more if they think rates are really going to take off. They did not have a good year relative to their peer groups, but it was a pretty tight range in that one-year basis. So,
Mike Ferguson. Okay, I know on fixed income, on 101%.
Yeah,
lighting in your tennis box or something.
Yeah.
So they're 93rd for 1 year.
Yeah, if we went to do a search right now, you know, the range you'd find is, it's, I don't know, it'd probably be, I'm sort of talking off the top of my head here, but it'd probably be the five managers that say if we cut it down to five fixed income managers we'd recommend. And by the way, Sawgrass is still one we like, so. Despite the fact they struggled this year, their long-term numbers are still very attractive and very solid. But the range would be maybe minus 2 to plus 2 or something. You know, it's not a huge range there. And he's always done, at least historically, has done a good job of protecting it again on the downside. Didn't this year relative to the benchmark as much as usual, but he's got the leeway to do that. 5-year numbers, 3- and 5-year numbers are still ahead of the benchmark. So no real concern there, but we'll watch them. They've got the leeway now. They don't have any. He can't come back. Sawgrass can't come back to us and say, well, and I don't think they would, by the way, but he can't come back and say, well, I was constrained by the benchmark. I couldn't go as short as I wanted to go because the benchmark was at an average maturity of 5 years, and we don't go below 10% of that. Or he can't do it because we changed the guidelines to align to, and he agreed to it.
And we gave him everything
that he wanted. And he recommended it. Yeah.
Everything that he wanted to be able to do, whatever he
could. And it was during the year. I had to go back and look at it. That may be part of the reason, other form. Maybe it didn't.
I think we finalized that in November meeting.
Yeah. So no concerns there. I mean, it's still the same team that you guys have had for a long time. So they usually come pretty well. Like I said, 5 years still. No changes there that would cause any alarm. You know, we've done a lot of work on the portfolio, we being you and us, and over the year, the last couple of years, and right now I like where everything is, so I'm not really making any recommendations for changes.
Yeah, I love that graph from, what is it, 9? Because I knew we'd changed a lot of stuff, but I didn't realize we went from only having basically 4 things, counting cash, to what we have now.
On page 8, me?
Yeah, page 8.
Yeah.
I mean, you think about it, but then it doesn't, till you see it, how much actually has changed.
And there's a you know, a couple good reasons for that. One is, you know, the old 64, it used to be if you had an 8% assumption rate or anywhere near it, right? You could have 60% in equities, 40% in bonds, and expect to get there. Basically, that allocation would have gotten you there over the last 30 years. We don't think that's the case anymore. You still have an assumption rate, though, in that range, right? And so I can't remember where we are. Are we at 7 to 8, 40?
8.
We're at 8. That's right. We had to go from 8 to 8, right? So you're at 8%. 60-40 isn't going to get us to 8, I don't think, because that 40 is probably going to be struggling just to give us a coupon rate of return. Just say 3% or 4% instead of 6 or 7 that it's given us in the past 30 years. So how do we get there? Well, that's where we started adding the different asset classes. Plus, there's more availability to those asset classes for plans our size. Right. I mean, the vehicles are there, the MLT investments, they're very liquid now.
Compared to what they used to be.
What they were 10, 15 years ago, especially. The real estate, being able to get into prime commercial real estate through these commingled funds, it's direct investments. You're not buying a REIT. You're not buying a stock. You're buying direct participation in those properties, and that should lower volatility and help stabilize the returns. So, good availability of products, and let's take advantage of it, right? And so far, it's worked out pretty well. I don't know if we'll always will every quarter, but it's looking good right now, and I like where you're positioned. So I think we tinkered enough for a little while here. We'll obviously always look for other vehicles and things that we could move into, but you're looking good right now. I guess it's not a separate agenda item, so do we want to... You want to address the where to get the money?
Yeah, why don't we? I don't know. How do we stand the leash on availability of funds? Because we do have to, we don't have to raise that entire $1.8 million at once, but.
No. I have enough, I think, May's expenses. I really need to take a look at it now that I've just paid May's. And Friday there was a deposit to give you a solid number. But we should still be around the $500,000 mark at Bank of New York.
Say a half million, so you need $1.3 million?
Yeah, but the first payment in June is for the first drop retiree, and it's $500,355. So I'm not sure we need to raise any.
It's June?
It's in June. He leaves at the end of the month.
He leaves the end of this month?
Yeah.
And then we have what, a million?
Then it'll be about $1.3 million in August.
Okay.
I can get with both of you and let you know what the accumulation is. It's in the end of July.
Well, just to make this simple, maybe for the board, this is why we handled some other boards, but if you go to page 7, these numbers are fairly similar to where they are now. I'm looking at current values I have on my iPad. The recommendation, you know, I showed you we were overweighted in domestic equity, particularly in the large cap. So the recommendation was going to be to pull the money first from Sawgrass large cap growth, which is where we have the overweight. And then, I mean, if we were needing $1.8 million, I was going to say $1 million from Sawgrass and $800,000 from Westwood's large cap product. So from Sawgrass large cap growth and Westwood large cap value. So maybe that ratio for any money that we need. Follow that. So
that's a
$1.80. So
Sawgrass large cap
growth and Westwood large cap value. So
what's that split?
It's not an even
almost 50-50, but
each dollar you take out of Sawgrass, you take 8 cents out of Westwood.
There you go.
That's going to make a nice motion.
Well, just try to even it up a little bit. That'd be what I'd recommend. And then you could just, I guess, maybe prove that and allow Dale and I to have, or to get the final numbers and do that.
That's the only comment I got. You said you got a half a million in the bank in June 1st. You're going to pay half a million?
Yeah, it's effective in June. I mean, he's leaving May 31st, so.
You I just wouldn't. Check. No. I wouldn't move something now. I wouldn't want to cut that too close.
How much of a cushion do we need to keep in there?
When is he being paid, June 13th?
Well, his drop account, I'm not sure how soon you pay that after the exit drop.
I still pay everything on the 15th.
It'll be June 15th.
It's 55.45%, just for the record.
That was a little tough to do in the head.
To make you feel better. But you could approve up to $1 million out of Sawgrass and then the balance from West. You could do that too, but you like the split better.
No, that'll actually, if you did that and I'll pay them out, then we'd be overweighted the other way. So I'm trying to keep it.
Yeah.
Why don't we move a half a million now with additional $1 million or additional $1.3 million prior to August 1st?
Would it be better just to, well, and I agree with what you're saying, but rather than moving $300,000-ish that may not be working for us for a month and a half, would it be better to move the minimal amount that we need to, and then like do a two-part motion to move, I don't know, $200,000 now, and then the 1.6 on 8-1?
Well, I prefer to keep as little cash as possible, yes. Now, the market could go the other way, and we wish we had more cash. But in general, you get paid for, you get rewarded for not holding a lot of cash.
Now, the $500,000 we have available in cash goes usually to paying monthly expenses.
So we said the plan do we need to raise that to cover the monthly expenses between now and August?
No. That's there to cover the expenses between now and August.
We just said plan on that towards the 1.8 or so.
No, some of that should be available for in the 1.8, but not all of it, not the whole half.
What are the monthly expenses running on average?
They're running about $260,000.
Well, so why don't we just go with what you said, approval for...
You guys kind of has made that
percentage. 55.45 as needed.
Yep. 55.45 as needed. Work with Dale to, and obviously Dale work with you.
How about approval to raise up to that amount now, and then if we work it out what we need less, then we won't raise that much.
Okay. Yeah. So motion number one would be approval to raise up to the amount we need to cover all the impending drops between now and the end of August.
At a ratio of 55-45.
At a ratio of 55-45 as you deem it necessary. As Larry, Dale, and Alicia deem it necessary to move it.
55 from Sawgrass, Orange County Road, 45.
Yeah. And y'all just move it when you need it.
Yeah. I mean, we could do 50-50 and adjust later, but since I see the numbers right now in front of me, 55-45 is not that hard. But we can figure that out.
I move that we do it on an as-needed basis, move up to the amount needed to cover the drops.
Which is what?
As Dale and Larry deem necessary on a 55% from Sawgrass, 45% from Westwood basis.
And that's a total payout of $1.8 million as well.
For all four of them. I'll second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Motion passes. Good.
You tell me what.
Yeah, I'll work with Alicia.
Let's give Sawgrass and Westwood a couple of these numbers.
Okay.
Larry,
mm-hmm.
Are we done with that?
Yeah.
Okay. What do you see, or what do you think you see coming later on down the line to play with that allocations again to get where, to talk, get a little bit closer to the target? I mean, I'm cool with where we're at relative, but I mean, do you see any more? Another asset class or just some reorganization to balance up?
A couple of things I would see right now is that number one is as we have cash needs, if we have any more, we'll continue taking from large cap, because even with this withdrawal, if it's 1.8 million, we're still slightly overweighted by about, well, around 5% so overweighted. Things have to work out. The, because the plan's now almost $60 million, 58.5 million. The convertibles are a little, if this market continues to run, maybe next quarter I might come to you and say, hey, let's take a little off the table again, maybe move some of the large cap money into convertibles, get a little closer to the target there, get a little more defensive, the higher the market gets. You're at about 8.5% right now. International, I'm okay with the underweighting there. Well, right now, that's potential down the road, though. We could certainly up it there.
I guess my question is as we added everything, we never went full bore with them, but when we went into the infrastructure one, we pretty much tapped it right then.
Yeah. Well, again, some of that has to do with the timing and where we were and what the asset allocations were and wanted to get you in there.
Do we have any more money? Do we still have another call for the interstate?
I don't think we're right now. That's something we could consider. Like I said, I'm okay with everything right now, especially since we had a couple $1 million in withdrawal. But any of these that are slightly below the target, we can start shifting a little bit over, making small moves and stuff to get over there. I kind of like where we are now. I still like the overweight. The overweight to equity. I mean, we still like equities right now. Relative to bonds, certainly.
Well, the other thing, I think there's several more drops coming up.
Yeah.
There's a couple more right after the first of the year and a couple more in the middle of the summer next year. So, I mean, we got opportunities to, and we could just keep pulling from there. I just didn't know if you were, like, looking at anything in the future that we should be aware of now.
No, we don't have anything like we were doing a lot of homework on convertibles. I think I probably told you that a year before I recommended them. Yeah. The same with MLPs. Nothing right now. That we've had some managers in on international bonds, talking to them a little bit. Not sold on it yet. A lot of currency issues there. We've got some alternatives, hedge fund managers. A lot of hedge fund managers have been coming through the office that we had some by request, some just called us. But we, that's a possibility down the road, but they would be true hedge funds. Hedge funds encompasses a very large universe now, and some of them, the highly levered, highly risky, high-risk funds versus what are true hedge funds that are protecting on downside. We'd be looking for some of those. So nowhere near recommending anything right at the moment. There's nothing out there that we'd probably go a fund-of-funds approach if we did that. There's a few managers that we actually use a couple of them in some foundation accounts, but I'm not a big fan.
Given what's going on with Russia, do you see any regulatory things coming down, like what came down on the African countries a couple of years ago?
Yeah, it's possible. The restrictions. I haven't heard of anything right now from investment prohibitions like we've got the Sudan-Iran issues and things like that. I haven't seen anything come across the desk if anybody's proposing here in Florida. I don't think there's anything out there, but that doesn't mean there couldn't be. But I'm not sure where
that's
going. I'm not sure where that's going.
Every night there's freedom.
It's between that. The big thing we're watching more is Yellen and how she's being perceived. And, of course, everybody's analyzing every single word she says and what word she emphasizes. It's kind of getting crazy. She seems to be, they just lowered the tapering to $45 billion. And what was it? It's PC 85 or 85 billion, I think. So now they're lowering. So that's an indication that they think things are picking up in the economy. If things can pick up slowly, I mean, obviously they're going a little too slow, but if things pick up slowly and we don't see a whole lot of inflation, that could be continued great news for stocks. And a slowly rising interest rate for bonds is not necessarily bad news for this pension fund, nor is it bad news for those receiving pensions, I guess, because they're not getting money now. They put your money in the bank and you're getting 0 to 1%. So slightly higher would increase income to a lot of people, and could possibly increase spending and have fuel a little bit of GDP growth. So it's not that a rapidly rising rates, different story, chokes off the housing market, chokes off the mortgage market, and we got problems. So the Fed's well aware of that. I think that's what they're trying to manage. So as long as we continue to stay in an interest rate environment where the 10-year treasury has stayed below 5%, 4-5%, a slight rise in interest rates could still be good news for the stock market. If it gets above that level, money starts moving out of stocks and into bonds, is what our research has shown. I think we actually, that's our piece on the quarter in the front, the outlook piece. So that research showed some considerable difference if rates are higher above that 5% level, and the impact it could have on stock markets, but we're nowhere near there. So we think that investors still favor stocks. Keep our overweighting the way we've got it now. Obviously, always looking for places to diversify. If we see something that looks good, we'll. You know, one of the advantages I like to kind of tout our firm is at $3 billion in assets, we're large enough to attract about anybody who wants to do business in Florida, but we're small enough to be nimble enough to get there quicker than most people. So we have about, we have managers from every asset class you can imagine calling us. And we interview about 100 managers a year, a little over 100 managers a year we talk to, either at their location or in our office. So that's what we spend a lot of time doing between the meeting cycles. And so we're always open to new ideas when something comes up.
I can tell you what we've done here isn't a fluke, because I've done much the same thing with my personal money, and it's worked out to be just about the same way. Everything, so I mean, I say kudos to you, because I mean, I kind of mirrored it with my investor guy and talked to him about things that I've done, you know, that I've learned here and all, and yeah, it's worked out, I mean, about the same way, so I like the way it's headed.
No guarantee, what's that little footnote they always put, no guarantee of future results, past performance, no guarantee of future results, but you know, Burgess has got about 30 years experience in this business. I've got about 33 years experience in this business, so hopefully some of it's starting to pay off. Takes a while. Hopefully it's starting to pay off. Got some good young talent in the office too, so it's been a good mix of them. Thank you.
Thank you, Larry.
Thank you. Next will be the administrative agreement.
Again, I'll add that. Again.
Well, as I've said at the other meetings, I want to thank the lawyers for working together on this, so that made life simpler as we went to the boards. We do have a few final things. We've obviously had two other board meetings since we came together, and since we are so late in the year, they've recommended on page number 8, the term of the agreement, to go ahead and go to 2017. Instead of stopping at 16, because we're, you know, basically putting it into effect. You can decide in a moment. The next one they recommended was number
6. Our copy we have doesn't have page numbers or articles.
It's number 8.
Article 8.
Article 8. Article 8. Well, that doesn't have, that's why I looked for page. I said page number, and then I referred to Article 8. I apologize. And then Article 16, assignment. A board member at one of the other boards recommended this, to say this agreement shall not be assigned by any party without the prior written consent of all other parties, because as you know, all three boards are signing plus the city, so they felt like rather than just say the parties, it's really not the, it's any one of the four can't do it without the written consent of all other parties. So that would be one motion. And then the final was from Alicia. As the attorneys got together, they thought that the custodial bank was the one processing the 1099s and the 945s and all the distributions. So if you'll go under the year-end reporting, do you have a copy that is redlined and blue lined?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Under Attachment A, I apologize. Attachment A towards the end. There's one, two, the third one down that says year-end reporting. You see where it's lined through, where it says prepare and send the 945 forms.
Mm-hmm.
And then it says this should stay, because she does prepare and send all the 945 tax forms to IRS. And then on the second bullet,
it says, it originally said prepare and distribute, we went back to that language, because she does prepare and distribute all the 1099s, and we took out all the language for the custodial bank. Again, the attorneys just didn't know. Typically, the custodial banks do this process, but, and then when you go down to the last bullet in that section, it says, prepare year-end statements. And she's doing it, she's not just providing. And then if you go under preparation of pension payroll, she's not working with the custodial bank, she is simply distributing the pension benefits. And then go the fifth bullet down where it says notify the custodial bank. She doesn't notify, she just releases the payroll deduction checks from here, which she did today. And then on the last bullet, it says distribute pension payroll reports, not from the custodial reports, she distributes them herself. So with those changes, oh, excuse me, one more, next page, active participants, the third bullet, she is preparing the annual pension benefit statement for fire participants. So with those six changes there, we are ready to move for approval if you are ready. And then the fire's going to have to go back and approve it. So the other general board approved it with those changes.
Emily was here this morning.
Yes.
Had no issues with those. The last couple of things.
Everything that's redlined is acceptable to the city as well as the attorneys, yes, sir.
And he had no problem with the any and all one?
Nope.
Section 16.
Sounds great.
And he was okay with going on a 3-year contract to 2017?
Because we've not reached out to the fire board yet, so as long as we reach back out to the fire board, they're going to put it back on their office agenda, but at least we had general approval this morning.
Leaves the attorney for the general board.
Yes.
Okay, so he's reviewed and approved. Was he in this morning's meeting?
Yes, he was, and all the redlined information here. Lee and the fire board's attorney discussed it by phone, and they came up with these redline changes.
I move we approve this new agreement.
All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? No motion passes. Aye.
Wait, I don't have to hear about this again until 27.
Whatever will you do, you're done.
Do we have another person yet? Oh, the half person?
No.
Is that what you're going to talk about later or something?
I'll talk about it real quick. We decided to continue to do the work in-house and handle it. Alicia will be our prime person. We're going to handle things in-house and not fill the position right today. We may come back. It's still there. It's still available for us to fill the position, but we'll come back and revisit it. We'll let you know.
That actually came from Alicia.
When I get it. That came from Alicia.
So actually these numbers are going to actually...
Well, what will happen is we will keep track of the... Like if I have four or five employees that want 2 hours here and 2 hours there, she'll keep track of them and then she'll bill, for, you know, as she uses those employees. But we won't... There's no reason to have a person sitting around doing nothing unless bill you for... something, somebody that's not working.
No, I understand.
So that's how we're going to handle it for now.
So you figured out a tracking system, what we were talking about?
We did. Lisa's got it covered, so yes, sir. I appreciate all the hard work with everybody working together on that subject.
Mm-hmm. All right, next is the summary plan description.
We're required by Florida statute and our own ordinance to provide a summary plan description to the members of the plan on a biannual basis. There's a, and I didn't distribute this to you guys in advance, because there were only three minor changes, basically, that were prompted by some, a few recent changes that were IRS regulations when our ordinance was approved last year. On page four, do you need a copy of this?
I don't as well, but we can...
We'll get it once we get the signature.
Matter of fact, they were just here last week, and they were asking for summary plan descriptions of reviewing them, so that...
Yeah, our last was approved in November of 2011, so we're a little bit overdue on this one, but it's... page four, paragraph H, disability. There's a little bit of... additional wording that was added to the second paragraph, and it was just basically cleanup language on that page. No changes on pages 5 through 8. Page 9, paragraph N, maximum benefit. This was increased from the old rate. This is an IRS requirement from the old rate, which was a maximum benefit of $195,000, now it's $210,000. And then on page 11, the entire section item number 11, section 11, is new wording that was prompted by the Florida legislature adopting section 732-703 regarding ex-spouses beneficiary. So that's all new wording, paragraph 11.
Okay, can we go quick enough when you talk about the first change on page 4? Letters H, 1 and 2. Are we talking about the second paragraph down?
Yeah, let me. It's a disability retirement on page 4, paragraph H.
Okay. And what's the change?
And it is, I'm sorry, the paragraph after number 2 that starts out terminated persons, okay, either vested or non-vested. He actually added the language, the old language, if I can read it to you: terminated persons, either vested or non-vested, are not eligible for disability benefits, except those terminated by the city for medical reasons may apply for a disability within 30 days after termination. That's the old language, and what you see in front of you is the new language that says your application will be processed and fully considered by the board. If you voluntarily terminate your employment after filing the application, you will not be eligible to be considered for any disability benefit. So that new language after 30 days after termination date, the remainder of that paragraph is the new language.
Okay.
And Lee said that was just a cleanup, basically, of the verbiage in the old SPD.
So any terminated employees has 30, am I reading this right? Any terminated employee has 30 days in order to make a disability?
If they're terminated by the city for medical reasons,
okay,
such as the case of that recent disability application we had, then they have a 30-day window to make an application.
Okay.
Otherwise, an employee who leaves of his own volition, he's got to apply for the disability benefits before he actually terminates.
Or is fired for any of them.
Or if he's fired.
Or if we, like, there's just one terminated, it had nothing to do with medical,
mm-hmm,
he's terminated, he can't.
But if he were to come up today and say, oh, by the way, I got injured at such and such a time, I'm sorry, he can't. Because he wasn't terminated for that reason.
Which, I mean, I don't think we ever given a disability for anything other than a medical one anyway. I don't think anybody's ever tried to come back after the fact and say anything. It's always been people that the city have let go, because...
We did have one years ago that came back about 2 months afterwards and tried to apply. Lee's office sent him a letter and told him, because the ordinance specifies that as well, that you have that 30-day time period in which to apply.
Okay.
And she tried to apply even beyond that, and he's off and sent him a letter, and that was the end of that.
Okay, I understand.
And if approved, then we'll distribute this as we did in the past. The last time, we actually scanned the document into a file, and I emailed it to everybody at the PD, and then I find that with an electronic receipt showing that they've opened it. Rather than trying to distribute hard copies to them and get signatures on a form, it had to be retained. And then all new employees, because there are so few of those as we hire them, I just give them normally a hard copy as I meet with them when they're.
Is this available on the PD's internet?
No, but we could probably get with Tom and make it available.
Probably wouldn't be a bad thing.
It's available on my.
On the cities.
It's on the cities.
It's on the cities.
So it wouldn't be bad to put it on the PD's.
We're on our internet, right in that same folder that the contracts are in.
Yeah.
All right, well, I'll move that we adopt and approve the City of Ocala Police Officers Retirement System Summary Plan Description as discussed on today's date.
I have a second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Next issue is Matthew Pinter. Since our last meeting, I have been to the Army National, or the National Guard, or whatever it is down there, off 7th Road. And I was advised that he is still active. The address that we have for him is still current. I mean, this was a couple months ago, but at that time, the address was still current, the one that we sent the certified letter to. He's still using that. He's still using the same phone number. He's reporting out of Orlando for military purposes or whatever, but still resides here. I got.
So he's not attached to that email anymore?
No, he's actually out of Orlando. No, I got a phone number from, I don't know if it was a lieutenant or a captain or something here, for Matt. I called him, left him voicemails. Called him as recently as twice last week and left him voicemails, and he has never called me back. I don't know. I mean, I was all in favor of being working everything out as peacefully as we can with him because we're the ones that made a mistake, but he's clearly not trying to respond to us. I mean, he got the letter. He signed for the letter that was sent to him, and now I've called him at least 6 or 8 times, and he hasn't returned a single phone call. I've personally been to his apartment. I left a note on the door of his apartment. Nothing.
I also checked with FDLE because he had gone through Corrections Recruit Academy out here at CF, thinking possibly he was working for one of the local jails or prisons, and he's not been hired locally because of some pending issues with the state. So he's been through the training, but he hasn't yet been hired by the agency.
Okay, what's the next step? We try to hire an attorney and bring a civil action against him?
Well, I think we've got a couple of options. We can bring a civil action. We could turn it over to a collection agency and have a collection agency try to collect it.
What was the amount again?
$7,900 and something. I don't know.
And what's the max amount that they allow on small claims now?
The reason I'm asking is we're going to get 40%, which is like what collections agencies are. If you're going to give 40% of that to them, if they collect it, you could almost do a small claim.
And get a judgment against them,
and it's going to cost you $275. Even if it can't recoup the entire amount.
Ultimately, it's going to cost us more than $275 because our attorney's going to have to, got to figure out how it'll be time for Lee and everything else.
Well, I mean, this would be a question for Lee, him not being here, but a small claim can be done by a person. like a plan administrator.
Right.
The letter we sent him, what did it say? Sort of like.
Please contact us within 60 days and no interest will be charged, something along that line.
Yeah, there was an error that was made, an overpayment that he needed to contact the office to make arrangements for the overpayment. I don't know that it had a specific,
it didn't.
Date that he wouldn't be charged, I'm not sure of that.
Yeah, I think that discussion happened after the letter got sent.
Okay.
So there was no mention of any civil action or any legal implications at that point?
Just one letter?
Yeah, we haven't sent another.
I'm with you, Derek, you probably need to send a second letter.
I'm just wondering, could we get Lee to do a more impassioned letter on his letterhead saying that pending legal action is coming his way?
That's what I was going to recommend.
Yeah.
Because a lot of times you'll get somebody's attention if they receive a letter from an attorney.
With a 30-day limitation on it.
Or a letter from the plan administrator signed by all the members of the board saying, pay up or else.
Well,
I think that attorney has a little more.
Well, I can do that too, but I think you get a little more clout from the attorney.
Yeah.
And if you're paying someone to collect that money now.
Pardon me?
He's trying to take the cheap route first and then get the attorney involved, right? I don't blame you.
Well, I think a letter from Lee, I mean, that's not going to.
Because I mean, I'll sign a letter as the secretary and he knew, the guy we're talking about works for me. He knows I mean business when I say.
Matt signed the first letter, so.
And Matt signed the first.
Yeah.
He's already blown off a letter from us. I don't think another letter.
Yeah, I think we're just good. Delaying the inevitable.
I would suggest a letter from Lee and.
Then it needs to, do we need to make a decision? I know it was 60 days from the time that letter was sent that we said the last time, wasn't it 60 days we wouldn't start charging, so is he on the bad wagon now?
Honestly, I don't remember, but it was in the letter.
I think the original letter just said there's been an overpayment. Please contact us so that we can arrange for the excess money to be repaid or something to that effect. And I don't think it had a 60-day. We discussed that at the later meeting.
Yeah.
About 60 days.
I think a letter from Lee with a definite, if you do not contact him within so many days, legal action.
Will institute legal action.
And interest will begin on whatever the first of the next month is and whatever rate he decides is legally permissible. I don't know if there is one on that or not.
Well, the interest rate's the our assumption rate, so I mean, it's going to be an 8% interest.
And we can get a legal opinion from Lee whether collection, civil suit,
right? Honestly, this is just my opinion. If, say, just theoretically, the most you could get for small claims filing 275 is $5,000. You send it to collections, they're going to get 40%. You're going to come out with even less if you didn't pay it. Or you go get a judgment on them. And I mean, the judgment's almost a default thing. But I mean, that's options that Lee can talk about. But I really honestly, for this amount of money, paying Lee's hourly rate to do it. No offense, Lee, because I know you'll read this, but. It could get pretty expensive.
Well, I think a letter, I mean, we're...
Yeah, no, a letter, yeah.
A half hour.
I'm talking about actually doing a lawsuit for...
Oh, no, well, I was talking about a letter at this point.
If you recall, when we discussed this before, Lee even said that if it were to come to that, we'd probably get a local litigator to handle that and to handle, try to handle a collection rather than his rate. But,
yeah.
So, I would think we should... And we just need some direction. That's why I put it on the agenda. We just need some direction on which way to go, and whether we want to try to take him and go to court now, or if we want to wait.
I'll move that we have Lee send a letter with very specific terms outlining when the repayment starts, at what interest rate it will be from the first of whatever the next month is from when he sends it, you know, if it's May, June 1, or if it's June. And it had a definite, what do you think, 14-day response period.
I'm okay if we pass the motion, I would just suggest let's authorize Lee to, I mean, authorize Lee to contact Flinker.
I agree.
And make the demands he thinks that are appropriate.
Yeah, I agree.
And yes, there needs to be a deadline, there needs to be mention of an interest rate.
It's, well, I guess it's some sort of legal action if he doesn't.
Yeah.
Yes. Contact us or follow through.
So does that cover everything in the motion?
Well, the motion is for Lee to send a letter telling, a strongly worded letter that we're going to have the payment back, stating the interest rate, and that he must respond within 14 days.
Or further legal action.
Yeah.
Okay, yeah, I didn't finish, or further legal action may be forthcoming. Does that make it complete then? Okay.
I'm okay with that.
Can you second that?
I'll second. Lee, if we, if there's something wrong with our motion, Lee can tell us.
Okay.
All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Are you, next to the attorney before, I know Lee's not here.
I've got some information from Lee.
Nothing passed.
Bear with me for just a moment. Basically, we dodged the bullet with the legislation. All the legislation Lee had told us was pending, none of it passed.
Not even the compromise that came up after that.
Not even the compromise that was supposed to have been done the first day, or last day. So none of the pending legislation passed. I did speak with Lee about Ray's appointment, because Ray's been unable to attend personally in the last, for over a year. He said Ray could continue as a city appointee. His position comes up for reappointment this year, in this summer. The appointment ends on August 6th. He said he could continue to attend by telephone if he's physically unable to attend, as long as we have a physical quorum here. And that's the city's appointment. This is just our information for you guys. He did say there was a proposal on the Senate Bill 534 that was passed last year that required all the additional actuarial reports from the actuary. There was some legislation discussed on that to repeal that, and that was not successful either. But they do believe there may be a judicial challenge of that, which, if it rules in favor of the plaintiffs, would rescind that law.
You mean the six different calculations?
Yeah.
All the other money it's going to cost everybody?
Right. And he said what we do need to consider concerning that law that we can discuss at the next meeting is the work we're going to have Doug do on that, how much of it, because there are five or six different actuarial reports, and he said, and we've got to discuss exactly what Doug will calculate for disclosure purposes. Because whatever he does, once it's accepted by the board, it becomes a public record. And just the basic statutory minimums, or do we want to exceed that in terms of any reports he does?
Well, I know he said it was going to be, wasn't it like 40% more to do it than what
cost-wise,
within what it costs for him to do the annual now?
Yes.
Did he ever give us a hard number on that, though?
No, I have not gotten.
I guess a lot of that's going to depend on what that number is.
We had an issue that I spoke with Lee about. It was discussed at the general board meeting this morning regarding an officer who in January was demoted to a general position. Our current ordinance provides for cross-crediting of service, which means that if an employee works for the city in a general capacity and then works for us as a police officer or a firefighter for that matter, any of the pension plans that are operated by the city, that we have a cross-crediting provision for purposes of determining eligibility for retirement. This former officer is now a dispatcher with the hope of becoming a police officer again at some point in time in the future. He had a little over 16 years of credited service with the department. And the question currently is, because of all the changes in the general plan, does he fall under a new employee as a general employee, which would require that he be a defined contribution member, or does he, because he went to work for us 16 and a half years ago, does he fall under the purview of being an old general employee where he could continue to take part of the defined benefit plan? And that's a question that the general board kicked around today, and they're having to ask the attorneys that drew up the new ordinance for their opinion on it. And
you mean their new ordinance?
Their new ordinance. Because that was not addressed at all in the general, in the new general ordinance.
When you say cross-credit, that means, does that mean money changes hand when he collects his retirement benefits?
Or? No, basically what it means is for purposes of retirement, let's say someone worked 15 years as a general employee and then they became a police officer and they worked another 15 years. Generally for us to retire, you've either got to be at least age 52 or have 25 years accredited service. Well, with 15 years, he wouldn't meet that second criteria. And maybe if he started at age 18, he's only 48 years old. So he wouldn't meet the criteria of being age 52 either. So cross-crediting means we say, okay, you worked as a general employee for 15 years, you worked for us for 15 years. So combined, you have enough years of service, you could go ahead and retire with 15 years of credit in our plan and 15 years of credit in the general plan. And the general plan was worded the same way. If somebody had that number of years in either, they could draw a retirement benefit from the general plan. And what the old plan says, you had to be at least 65 or you had to have 30 years of service. And there were several other provisions that came into play as well. But the cross-crediting means you get what you earn in each of the two plans, and it's paid by each of the two plans. We just combined it. And we've got several other persons over there at the PD. In fact, there's 18 or 20 of them.
In about 15 years, there's going to be a rash of them.
Yeah, that fall under that umbrella of cross-crediting. And that's something back in 2000, you were on the board back then, named that our actuary, Ward Foster, and we and Lee made sure to include that in the plan, in all three plans, to make sure somebody basically wasn't penalized for working a number of years in one plan and then, you know, they weren't treated as a new employee, a totally new employee. And it's for purposes of vesting as well as purposes of total credited service.
So what are they doing with this employee right now? What land is he considered to be in?
He's kind of out there in limbo land right now.
We're
taking 3% from his salary. Because whether he's in the defined benefit or the defined contribution, we would take 3% in salary. We're just holding it. We're not sending it to the general. We're not sending it to the DC, either okay. One. And so we get moving on.
This is something that the city did not address when they adopted their new plan.
Right.
That's correct. Then it's the city's. Well, I sympathize with the former police officer, not dispatcher. And thanks for letting us know that there's really nothing for us to do.
There's really nothing for us to do, just to let you know we have that situation, and it could happen with others as
there's
well.
There's a flip side to this, too, that we talked about this morning. I don't know if you left the room or you were going to bring that up, so go ahead,
Diane.
That's if somebody starts as a dispatcher and they go into the DC plan because they just started with the city. and let's say they're working towards becoming a police officer, how do you address cost credit for that? Because DC is totally different from a DG. So.
So the way Lee explained to me, the way you address that is if somebody's in a defined contribution plan, either with the city or FRS or any other pension plan, we have a buyback provision where someone would come into our plan and purchase prior credit service, like you bought military time when you worked for us, that you could purchase that time. But Lee has given me the opinion in the past that if someone is in a defined contribution plan, such as the investment plan with the state, they cannot purchase that time when they come to work for us. Because basically they're truly double dipping with their pension when they do that. Because the defined contribution money is theirs and it's portable and they can take it with them. And he told me that if that were the case here, that would be his same opinion. For somebody who's a city employee, there would be no cross crediting there.
And then the third example is you start as a police officer today and you're not fully accredited or certified and you're in the general plan until you become fully certified. And we've been putting them in the general pension plan until they became fully certified.
Well, do they know that? Because I know there's one that's in that process right now.
Yeah, he's aware of it.
Okay.
So
I haven't spoken to him, but I'm sure he's, I guess he's aware of it. I don't know. We've had a number of others.
One that just got certified, and there's one that's waiting, that's still going through the process of getting certified.
And Lee's opinion on that one as well was, if they're in the process of being certified, we should go ahead and put them in the police pension plan because they're in the process of being certified.
We told me not that we should, but that we could.
Could, okay.
Not that we, and I'm not sure what he told you all at the meeting.
It might be right.
But he told me that you could.
Which would be a change to your plan, right?
And I would tend to agree with that because, like, the one that just got certified, every day was in a police car.
Yes.
Learning from police officers. Wasn't taking police function, but was out, right along, watching, learning, and was getting worked around the PD for various things. And I mean, this particular person probably is going to be a little bit ahead of the game than just grabbing them off the street. You are now a police officer, here you're in the FTO program.
Is it longer than a year to become certified?
Depends on what class they're in.
Yeah.
Okay. If they're in a full-time class, it's, 7 months?
Yeah.
Okay.
If they're in a part-time one, part-time, it's a year.
Yes.
You're a little over a year.
I'm wording with the Florida statutes. Wording with
That's kind of what I was going to address this issue and dictate what our plan would be.
Yeah, 25, really, from what I can recollect, it just says,
it says a police officer. Our ordinance says you must be classified as a police officer. Mm. Chapter 943 of the statute specifies that an agency has an option to list someone under what's called a TEA, which is a temporary employment authorization. Even if they're not fully certified, they can be listed as a police officer. The fire department has the same options with fire training. They can be listed as a firefighter without having completed the training, as long as they're either enrolled in it or they complete the training within a specified period of time.
Is this something the chief would also need to agree to?
If we were to elect to try to go that way, yes. My recommendation would be to not change what we do right now.
And if it wouldn't be a union issue?
There could be a union issue.
There could be.
Well, it hasn't been so far. Because what the PD has done for the last, we've hired a number of people who have worked at backgrounds, they've worked in other positions while they went to recruit school, and then once they finished recruit school, then they transferred over. And what it does, it creates an issue because they got that 6, 8, 10, 12 months of service in the general plan that's going to hang on there from the next 30 years. But I think what it does is it creates an unnecessary liability for our plan to show them credited service for that period of time.
Nothing against them, but they're not police officers.
They're not.
If they're hired to sit in
in records or in evidence or in backgrounds or whatever else. We have people in evidence and in records and in backgrounds that are not in our plan. They are not police officers. I agree. I don't. It's, you know, not to be nasty to anybody, but when they become police officers, and they can become, in my opinion, they can become part of the police officer pension.
Of course, if I understand the monkey wrench, it's always been DB to DB. Now it's DC to DB. That's the monkey wrench of these.
Well, and we're not looking at...
So it's fine to become police officers.
We're not looking at a giant amount of time. I mean, very rarely are they employed for... since I've been here, there's only been a couple of them that have even been hired, you know, and kept on while they were in the academy. There's only been, you know, very few.
But General has the accounting costs for that little $1,000-$1,500 for 30 years.
And right now, it's not General, it's the DC plan. So as long as the employees are understanding they're in a DC plan until they're a fully certified police officer, and their in-service date will not be the day they started with the city, it's the day they went into the pension plan.
That's an HR function.
They're aware because they're filling out forms and elections and saying, here's my paperwork, here's my beneficiary, here's the funds I want to put my 3% in. So it's not unbeknownst to them that they're in the DC plan. Right. I mean, it's hard for them.
If they're not paying enough attention while they're signing, so
that's all that. They should really be a police officer if they can't pull some false paperwork and pay attention to it.
And as a new employee, they've got all the part, all these stacks of documents they're having to sign.
Right.
And
so
I understand
are we
that.
Make a decision on this?
Pardon me?
Are we looking for a decision on this?
No, this is basically just an informational item and to let y'all know that it. About the one officer, you know, like I said, he's kind of in limbo. Diane's going to go back to the
I already had
J&J
to have us talk about it.
Yeah.
Do an ordinance change.
This is the brainstorm idea. And it might be the craziest thing said. You mentioned these men and women be eligible to buy back service for 6 months or 7 months or a year. Without them pay to the DC plan, can that be used to buy back service?
Well, Lee's opinion to me was they can't purchase defined contribution time in our plan.
No, I mean, but
no, no.
He's saying aside from that, if they've been put into the defined contribution, defined contribution can. When they finish and become a police officer, is that money available to be used?
That would negatively impact this plan. That would negatively impact the plan.
Yeah, what buyback service?
If you let them buy a year, they're getting 3% of $18,000 taken out, and you let them buy that year or whatever, you're giving them a year of 3.33 at $36,000.
Doesn't mean we have to reduce.
I'm
not saying that we reduce the cost of buying back, but can they use the funds that the city has withheld
as well as whatever they have to?
That's going to be a provision of what they can do with their money for the DB plan that they set up. Can they take their cash and just go give me the cash from it?
In the DC, not without IRS implications. I mean, I'm 25 years old and I want to be a cop and I hired on to the city and for 7-10 months I'm a records clerk and my money's going into my DC.
But if they
that's left. Not credited service for you guys because it's in a DC plan, it's not in a DB plan. If they had left employment of the city, they are entitled to that money, but with whatever IRS penalties apply.
Yeah, they have to pay their distribution.
And so, I mean, my accounting brain's going, why on earth would I cash out and pay, 20% IRS penalties on 7 months worth of, returns to buy into your plan? That wouldn't even make any sense. Oh, who would advise somebody to do that?
You would pay that penalty if you bought into something.
But you can't from the DC into the DB.
Yeah, you can't roll it over.
You can't roll a DC into
the
DB.
You can't buy the DC time.
So they'd have to cash out to use it. That's what he's saying. Could they get it? They could. But not into a DB.
Okay. It would become a distribution by IRS definition, even if you tried to roll it right over into a DB and say, this is it, I'm trying to buy some time.
Right.
Whether buying 3 months, 6 months, or a year with that amount, I think the IRS would treat it as a distribution, and if that person's under 59 and a half, it's going to be...
10%.
10% penalty plus ordinary income tax. So, you're buying service, but you're buying service with 60 cents on the dollar, or whatever, you know, 60 or 70 cents on the dollar.
Because it would cost more to buy your plan because of what your true fee is to buy into the plan.
You can't buy service, because you said you can't buy service.
So it wouldn't be able to buy...
Two different types of qualified plans.
Because we said we couldn't buy service. Now, the people that started in July last year, prior to change, when they leave the DB plan, what do you do with their dollars? Do you keep it there, or can they take it out?
If they leave and they're not vested, sure, they can take it, I can roll it. I can, whatever.
If they didn't make it through the program? They didn't make it through, but they did make it through the program.
They did make it through the program. It stays where it's at. You move over to police and...
1 year.
In 30 years, they'll get a pension for 7 months.
But they can roll it to like their, they can roll it penalty free to their ICMA account, and then they have a little bit more control over it, so to speak.
If they went with the DC, yes.
They can only roll their 3%.
Not with the DB.
They wouldn't roll their full accrued benefit.
They would just leave their DC. If they were in the DC when they started...
No, DB. We're talking DB.
Then they just leave their DB alone.
Yeah, the DB general doesn't roll out their vested or not vested.
Right, they're kept separate.
Yeah.
And so we've got a lot of people who are in that situation that have anywhere from 6 months to 7 or 8 years in the DB plan, who are now police officers, and I'm sure fire probably does as well.
And that's mind-boggling.
And at some huge, because there, before 2000, every city employee was a participant.
Yeah, I understand that now.
And then we had supplemental fire and supplemental police.
Yeah.
And then we broke them all out in February of 2000. And so we got some people, we got a number of vested, 7 or 8 or 12, whatever. Foster told us there were 12, but I think we got 7 or 8. And that are in that.
Oh, is that all just 7 or 8?
Police that are in that.
And then there's 7 or 8 in fire. And then there's probably...
Who are vested who haven't done it yet. And then we've still got quite a few others who are currently working there who have some general plan credit and...
We have a detective who was a dispatcher for like 7 years before they became a police officer. Yeah. And now they've been a police officer for 10 or 12.
Yeah. Now those people, can they buy credit into the police pension plan?
Not from the general.
Yeah.
It must be law enforcement.
They don't have to buy their cross credit.
They're
cross credit. But their money stays in general, their money stays at police. There's
a 2.55 multiplier and a 3.11.
Yeah. Right.
3.5.
So they have an AB check.
We just wanted to bring it to your attention.
They get an AB check before there was an AB plan.
Well, part of what you mentioned a minute ago, Dane, the monies that you would have saved up, say, in a 457 account or a 403B or a 401K, that if somebody wanted to buy back military time, they can roll that into our plan. We've had several officers do that, to use that as a buyback. But
they're not eligible to buy back unless they're... That's prior to military years.
And the general plan was not eligible.
So we hired two former sheriff's deputies last summer, late summer, and they were both in the state's investment plan, so they couldn't purchase prior credit service time because they were in the investment plan.
Well, that thing will have to work forever because of that.
I don't know. A couple of other things. Lee's office is going to conduct trustee training in the city of Lady Lake, town of Lady Lake, on June 11th at 3:00. It's expected to be about 2 to 2.5 hours. If anybody would want to attend that training, and it's going to be Scott Christensen from Lee's office and someone from the Bogdan Group and covering investments. And I don't know what the costs are, but the cost would be prorated amongst all the boards that attend. It does meet the training requirements, and Lee said to remind everybody that you are required to go through training, and what their rule of thumb is some sort of training in investments and legal at least once each term on the board.
Can you email that letter to
us? I will. So if anybody's interested, that's June 11th. I'm sorry, I don't know what day of the week that is.
I think it's a Wednesday.
It is a Wednesday.
Dale, when we get something to write down for future reference, nobody's in Tallahassee from this board because of the dates that we got for the meetings last year. Let's not make that.
Yeah, that again.
Somebody can attend.
When the dates came out, I think Alicia's planning on attending.
She's leaving, and as soon as you tell her, she can go.
Lee went. Lee's gone. Yep. Into the plane, though.
That's why Lee is not here this afternoon. But I think when we got our meeting dates from Lee's office back in September, they had firmed up the dates for this training conference in Tallahassee. That's why it conflicted. But there should be a fall conference again from the retirement. So.
That's right, they brought back the fall one, haven't they?
And that's so anyway, we don't care for
it. And Lee asked me to remind everybody of their financial responsibility disclosures that must be filed.
I haven't mailed them out yet.
Yeah, go get one offline.
Yeah, I did it.
They're really procrastinating this year.
That's I like them procrastinating as well, thank you.
Okay. Did you get fined for your procrastination?
Yeah. they don't pay any penalties. Yeah.
whether they notify you or not, you'll still get fined. Yeah.
You need to go hand that.
And I did discuss with Lee after our special meeting, the hearing that we had, the disability hearing in March. With the way that was conducted, I told him I had some problems with. He basically came in and told the board, as you all know, that the board was, to use his word, is stopped from not finding that the officer was totally and permanently disabled because he had been discharged by the city for medical reasons. And the city's letter of termination actually was that he had surpassed his FMLA limits, not based on the merits of his disability application. And I just had some issues with that. I felt like we were kind of blindsided with that when the board convened that day, and I felt like that the city had taken away some authority from this board to make the determination on whether the officer was totally and permanently disabled.
Just the way it was presented, we were told we could not do anything.
I realized that, that's something that perhaps the city needs to be made aware of when they do terminate someone. It's basically usurping the authority of these boards to rule otherwise, because in that particular instance there were some questions, and basically this board was told by Lee that it couldn't make any other finding than that he was totally and permanently disabled. And that's an HR issue as well. And we've had situations where officers should not have ever been hired in the first place or retained, and it's wound up coming back on the backs of this pension plan to wind up funding a benefit for them.
Well, it used to be, well, you know, the police department did all their hiring from start to finish. Now it's, these people qualify, here you go. Those are the people that you got to pick from.
Right.
So. Is anybody in the HR aware of the situation? How it affected their pension? Lee's opinion is?
I've talked to Lynn Vaselli, but I'm going to sit down and talk with her about it again.
Or Jerry?
And, yeah. I don't know Jerry.
So you're going to follow up with that? Yes. Okay, good. Jared is the director of human resources.
That's basically happened the last two times.
Yes, it has.
Disability situation.
Yes.
Or basically, we had no choice as to whether it was a disability.
Person was terminated by the city because they exceeded FMLA restrictions. Yeah, that almost the last three. And Vicky's was almost the way as well.
Yeah.
And that's all I have.
Does anybody else have anything?
Do we need to authorize your trip to Tallahassee to pay part of the cost?
Yes.
Or is that?
But. Yes.
But Alicia is planning on attending, as soon as we finish here, she's going to hit the highway headed to Tallahassee, but I'd recommend the board authorize a shared expense for her expenses to go to Tallahassee.
I've never written a month yet.
Did General give you money this morning? How'd they do?
Did General give me money?
Yeah. I mean, did they do what, say a third?
No, they had already approved for me to go prior to that.
And not to make her look bad, I told her okay beforehand. So it's not like she's sneaking around and at the last minute saying, hey, you guys want to help pay the bills. I talked to her right before she scheduled it.
Well, I guess that's what the question is it getting split?
Yes.
Thirds amongst the board?
By the percentages. That's part of her expenses that are shown, yes.
Okay, so it'd be by the administrative agreement?
Yeah, whatever the percentages are.
How will we approve this expenses for Alicia to attend the pension conference in Tallahassee per the breakdown between the three boards and the administrative agreement?
I haven't broke down mine or Sadie's. I was waiting for the administrative agreement.
All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Does anybody else have anything?
Well, one thing with what's impending starting tomorrow, we may need to have a meeting at some point.
We may, and depending on how the contract negotiations start tomorrow, Mike is going to be representing the pension board. I've been on the contract negotiation team for a while, and I have a fallen allergy, and so we don't see eye to eye, and Mike has graciously agreed to step in.
You two don't see eye to eye?
No.
No, him and the union
don't see eye to
eye. Oh, okay.
Yeah, the union and I aren't seeing eye to eye these days. And so Mike is going to take my place as far as negotiation, if need be. And I don't know what route it's going to go, but I know it's been discussed before about if it's needed to have the actuary come in. And that's probably something we need to bring to the board before we...
Yeah, that's still why I asked that.
But, and I don't... The union as of yet hasn't got the city's proposal for what wants to be changed or what wants to be discussed or anything else. I'm assuming that'll all come in tomorrow. So we don't know anything concrete, but I made it apparent to the union guys back when we were talking that we're not going to have the actuary come in for negotiations and things of that sort. I mean, there's nobody sitting at the negotiation table with the ability to decide. I mean, we're going back to Helsby now, right? Is Helsby going to the table?
Helsby is going.
I don't deal with that. This is my first thing. I'll be there tomorrow, and that's all I know at this point.
It's Helsby and Jared and...
I know who's eligible to be on the negotiation team.
Right, yeah.
So.
Yeah, and then...
Yeah, and we've done IBEW meetings, too. Wayne has been the one that's...
Okay. And I know before Horse, we dealt... Helsby was always one at the table. Helsby and then, you know, Sandra and everybody. And then when Horse was here, it went to Horse to actually sit at the table. And then now it's gone back to Helsby again. So there's nobody at the table that's
I guess, authorized to make the decisions. I think they'll get the information and take it back to, at least the way it's happened in the past, they get the information, take it back to the city, and then we'll, you know, it kind of ping-pongs back and forth like that. But there's no...
I think there's some parameters, because at the IDW, we've TA'd things at the table with health speed. My understanding is we've been given, like, things are out of bounds. Once you stay in here, you can TA. If it's out of here, then we bring it back. But we have TA'd stuff at the table.
Yeah, if it's something that's able to be agreed at the table, I'm sure then it's probably not anything big. But if it's something that necessitates us calling in the actuary and everything else, I've told them we're not going to have that at the negotiation table. It'll be somewhere else.
Okay, here's the problem that we have. The way the meetings are scheduled right now, there's no way we could have another meeting to authorize spending any money with the actuary to have Doug look at whatever was given and give us an accurate opinion of what it is. So do we need to pre-authorize that? Where I can go to him and say, this is what the city says, and run the numbers that way and tell me what we're looking at here.
Are you anticipating what they might propose?
I have my ideas, but I'm not going to say them at this time.
Okay.
I've heard some rumors.
Realistically, from meetings in the past, I think tension will be discussed. But I mean, that's a fair assessment, right? I don't know what the city is going to, what their proposal is going to be, if changes are what they're wanting to make. I don't know what those are going to be, but I'd be willing to bet a paycheck that at least I thought.
But if there are any changes, it is something the board is going to have to act upon because of what we just approved right there.
I'd be happy to meet on short notice or discuss by email or whatever.
Well, short notice, you might as well plan a meeting next week because we sit down tomorrow and then we sit down in like 2 weeks.
Okay, I'd be okay with that.
Well, then once we know something concrete.
Yeah, I think I'm something concrete about this time tomorrow. But, Doug said he needed a few days to digest anything and run anything also, but it's going to be discussed. There's no if, ands, or buts. There is going to be some proposal from the city.
Okay. I can meet on short notice, I think.
Well, part of my question was too, if we need to have Doug come in on behalf of the board and make a presentation similar to, and I know it's a different situation than the general plan was in, but similar to when the general employees went before council, you know, they had to speak their piece.
I'm assuming presenting to the negotiators?
I didn't see any purpose in him presenting to the negotiation team of the city. I anticipated if he was needed, it would be higher up than that. It would be something we'd end up with council or with that, or something along those lines.
Otherwise,
because it's a waste of time to have him come in and talk to the people that aren't only allowed to make this tiny decision. And I've spoken with the union about that, and the problem is unrelated to half of them, so I'll probably still get roped into doing it. But I had another fight with them on Friday night, so we're not seeing eye to eye.
So you think this would be only in an impasse situation?
Realistically,
not necessarily. I wouldn't say that.
Realistically, from my point
of view. I mean, outside of that, you wouldn't be addressing
right, health and that's what I'm saying. Realistically, from my point of view, if things go well, you know, and we can agree on stuff together, then it wouldn't be an issue. If it's something completely outlandish, then obviously it's, you know, a whole different situation.
Well, we have a contract with Foster and Foster to provide services to us, and if we have questions that come up, I don't see there's any problem with that emotion to go ahead and contact Doug or Patrick or somebody down there.
Okay, as long as
it's reasonable, I mean,
right.
Any special report might require special action, but you know, with questions and things like that, I mean, they're going to respond to whatever we.
Well, depending on what it is, and if it is one of the rumors that I have heard, which seems to be fairly persistent coming out of this building, it's going to require some numbers being crunched.
When you say that you have an agreement with Doug, you talk about when you have an ordinance change, he always has to do an actuarial impact study. Does the board typically approve that actuarial impact study, or is that just understood that he's going to have to prepare?
No, we actually direct him if an ordinance comes out of this board, then we direct him to do the study.
The actuary work for the pension board, or do they work for the union?
They work for the pension board.
So if the union as an organization has a problem with communications, is that the pension board's job?
The pension board is part of the union. They're two separate things. Right. The pension board, the union negotiates pension terms. Then the board administers them.
And that's why I think an approval from the board to spend that.
I just recall during the general thing that there was this distinction that the pension board didn't represent the employees, it represented the plan. So is that different from the pension board represents the employees and not the plan? Or the pension board stands for the plan and the administration of the plan, and if so, wouldn't the union need to hire their own actuary to represent themselves? Because this board is just going to carry out whatever is adopted, not necessarily on, I guess, lobbying on behalf of the union. I mean, do you recall that problem?
I understand what you're saying.
The people in the union are the people in the plan.
Okay,
If you have an increase in a benefit, and you've had an increase in the benefit in the past, have you had Mr. Lozen do anything prior to the ordinance being adopted?
Yes.
Okay, have you directed him to do that, to spend money prior? Has the board agreed to that?
Yes.
Okay, so I think you want the same agreement if there's going to be changes downward.
But that's an impact statement, mostly.
Yes.
Okay.
I think that's what you're saying, is if something happens and there's a decision that looks like...
Both memberships are affected by what goes on tomorrow. And from there forward. So both memberships are the same memberships, because the union, I am not a union member, but they negotiate on my behalf.
I think that's part of the misunderstanding. It's not the union bargaining tomorrow. The contract says that will be on, but it encompasses more than union members. It encompasses everybody.
And they cross bargaining.
Well, and I just asked because I just remember that it was a very fine distinction. They kept saying that the General Employees Pension Board does not represent the general employees, and therefore you can't be in here on behalf of the employees, and your statements or your study cannot be on behalf of the employees. Even though every single employee in that plan, you know, the board
has fiduciary responsibility to all the employees.
No, we have fiduciary.
And that was a legal thing. So that's just why I asked the question, because it became a huge blow up in a public meeting.
Or to the members.
And so we had the pension board saying that too. My responsibility is to the employees and the lawyers. It was the lawyers saying, no, you have a fiduciary responsibility to the plan. So it doesn't matter to you what the plan looks like, because you represent the plan, not the employees. So, I mean, and
we're responsible for the well-being of the plan, not getting the most money for the employees.
Right. So that's why I asked, are these, you know, as we're negotiating the plan benefit changes, the board is not necessarily concerned whether they're up or down. You're just concerned with flat, what's the impact in a verification stance. Yes, the numbers presented by these other actuaries are correct, and this is the, in fact, correct impact they'll have on the plan.
That would be one consideration, yes.
That's true, but also serving as a resource to those who are negotiating.
That's the reason I'm sitting on the negotiation team, is to provide and to give them that honest feedback so they can do the best for the employees, which is in turn going to affect this plan and how it gets administered or what we're able to do. because all those terms will, all the, whatever's negotiated, Marvin, we may have to turn around what we just did there, may have to change, because I mean, what if it says right to contract is 80%? What if it becomes 10 tomorrow?
Well, nothing's going to be decided.
No, I know that, but when I'm
still... I just wonder, because I just recall that being a major sticking point, and the attorneys going back and forth with who should have prepared, because the general employees, like, prepared their own, I don't know, options, I guess is what they call it. You know, we want to see these five things happen. And there was no actuary on behalf of those employees to do that, even though... We thought, well, the plan's actuary should do that because that's our.
No, so it just the dealings that I would have with Doug would be as to what effect is it going to have on this plan at under the rules that we're working under right now, and to give Dale some guidance as to, well, if this is what happens, here's what you need to do real quick, because ultimately a lot of that work's going to fall on him. Well, then, well, Felicia.
I would suggest we wait till you all start negotiations. And
right.
If we have a need for a special meeting to direct Doug to do it, we can call it a special meeting.
I just wonder if there were differences because of the already unionized versus, like, the generals at the time were not unionized. That's what there was. Don't speak attorney very well most of the time.
Well, you're going to have that. You're going to have that issue now from now forward with the general employees. Well, you didn't have it when it was done. But now you will.
Well, we know.
not to set off the beating of a horse, but does anybody have anything else? No. It is 2:48. Needs to turn.